Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Yvonne Brooks Show, broadcasting today from the city of Berlin, from the middle of Germany, and in the midst of a crazy tour around Europe. I'll be speaking in Berlin tomorrow, so this evening was actually free, which is unusual. We are broadcasting on Facebook Live, hopefully, those of you on Facebook are getting a good picture and everything's good. I don't know how long the Facebook Live feed is going to last. It's complicated, but I had to buy a cellular data plan from Deutsche Telekom just to facilitate this. And I bought 1 gig. And the question is, will 1 gig be enough to upload an hour and a half of the Yvonne Brooks Show? And I do not have an answer to that question. So I guess we'll find out if the Facebook Live just dies in the middle, then that is probably caused by the fact that I ran out of data. So there you are, trying to do these things on the road, trying to do these things from hotels. Every time you look at it, or every time you try this, it's, there's a new problem. There's a new issue. So, in the case, I don't know if this is boring to you, but there's always something. There's always something that creates an issue about, in a hotel. I was hoping to do the show yesterday from Stockholm, and I had my assistant call up in advance, and the hotel guaranteed that they had a wired Ethernet connection for the show. I need a wired connection for the stability and for Blog Talk Radio. And I get there, and there are wires. I plug all the wires in, and there's no internet. So I call down to the hotel, and they send up the technician. The technician looks at it and says, "Yep, we've got wires. They're just not connected to anything on the other side. A week ago, we had wired internet. A month from now, we will have wired internet. But right now, we're in the midst of changing our, we're changing our whole television system, internet system, and it doesn't work. So I had to cancel live from Stockholm, and instead you're getting live from Berlin, where we actually do have wired internet that is working. There you go. You never know once you get to a hotel what they tell you and what they promise. You never know. The resolution, I think, on the video on Facebook Live, I think is HD. Now, what exactly that is, I don't know. If somebody knows how to do the math, HD, let's say 7 something p for an hour and a half uploaded. How much does that consume? Is that a gigabyte going to be enough? I have no idea. All right. Just a quick update on my trip so far. Sorry I missed last week's show. I know Don filled in. I know there were some technical problems, but the show is really good. So those of you who have not listened to Don's show yet, you should listen back. He interviews a really cool economist, and a lot of interesting issues come through with there. And I would recommend you go back and listen to it. I was last weekend, I was in... I know you're going to feel sorry for me now. I was in Antigua. Antigua is a small island in the Caribbean. It's really close to Venezuela, so it's really South Caribbean. And I was there visiting with a donor to the Institute who invites people that he knows to spend a weekend at his house in Antigua. and spend it with conversation with him and then with the other guests. So had a an interesting weekend, getting to know some new people and at this home in Antigua. And then, surprising to me, there's direct flight from Antigua to London. So I flew from Antigua to London, and in London I did a talk in the evening on Donald Trump's election, and I think I called the talk Donald Trump and the Decline of Western Civilization. You've heard me talk about Donald Trump, so I'm not gonna resurrect all that. But the basic idea was that the culture's heading in the wrong direction. Donald Trump hasn't changed that fact. The election of Donald Trump hasn't changed that fact. Indeed, in some sense, it's highlighted real problems on the right when I think most of us knew about real problems on the left. I think what Donald Trump has done is highlighted real problems on the right and a really a type of right that we never believed and we never thought, I didn't believe and I didn't think was widespread. And I think now we are seeing that it probably is. So good. I enjoyed the talk. I was disappointed, I have to say, that nobody from the alt-right showed up. I thought that in England, which is a bastion of alt-right, there would be a few alt-right people to come and fight with me. I like a hostile audience, as some of you know. Nobody showed up, so it was a pretty friendly group. I thought the Q&A was really good. The video is up on YouTube. I encourage you to watch. I think it was a good lecture. I really talk about the essence of what Western civilization is and why I think this election represented more of an acceleration, if you will, and a shift away from what I think the essence of Western civilization is. So some new material there, I think, that maybe I haven't discussed on a radio show and maybe I haven't discussed much in previous talks. So check it out. It's on YouTube. Share it with friends. Get the word out if you like it and so on. From there, I flew to – let's see if I can remember all this because this is – I'm in Berlin, which is a country – if you count Antigua, this is country – oh, wow. This is country 8 in 8 days. This is country 8 in 8 days. So after Antigua, London, Zurich, went to Zurich, did a talk there on, and every one of these talks is the day I arrive, I do the talk. So this talk was on free speech and Western civilization. It was at an award ceremony that gave a kind of a lifetime achievement award to a journalist in Switzerland. And got to meet some Switzerland-based objectivists living in the land of the free or relative land of the free for Europe. That was a lot of fun. Some people who I've been following me on Facebook. I've been seeing their posts on Facebook. And one thing that has happened everywhere I've gone, which is just so cool, right, is that everywhere I go, Somebody will walk up, and usually more than one person will walk up and say, I listen to all your radio shows. It's so cool. I listen to all the podcasts. It's so cool. I mean, that's amazing to me that that this show now has a real global reach. I mean, we had people in Europe, but now it's really amazing. Everywhere I go, every single stop I went, from London to Zurich to Rotterdam to Sofia to Prague to Berlin, we'll see tomorrow if somebody says that. But it was, it's just been fabulous. Fabulous to meet the people who are listening to the show. Fabulous to see kind of the extent that is being the extent to which this is being listened to and taken seriously and followed. And yeah, I don't expect you guys to agree with everything I say on the show. What a thought, right? We can be objectivist and maybe disagree on some of the things, but it's cool that the listenership is there and so committed. By the way, if Phoenix on the chat here says that 1 gigabyte might only be good for 15 minutes. So I warn you guys on Facebook Live, I might have to take a break on Facebook Live and buy another gig of data, although this is going to get expensive really, really, really quickly. And I'm buying this out of my personal account because I didn't think it was right for the Institute to pay for this. All right, we'll see how it goes. Maybe Deutsche Telekom is more efficient. Maybe it's not going up at 420p. We will see. I'll check in a few minutes. We're already 10 minutes in. You know, let me just check, just for the fun of it, right? You guys have patience with me on Blog Talk. But let's just check and see, because I know everybody's really curious, how much data I've used so far. There's the Deutsche Telekom, 204 megabyte. So we've got, this will probably last, that's 10 minutes, 200 megabyte. So, 50 minutes, not even an hour. Now let's see if the website allows me to buy more, because then if I can buy one more gig, we're good. So, okay, let's do this. We're going to keep going. But at some point here, I'll take a commercial break. Oops. Well, live stream just died. Maybe because I flipped to the other website. All right, here we go. All right, so anyway, I'll take a commercial break and try to buy more stuff. Facebook will be coming back in now. You're back now. We're back now. Sorry, I think when I flipped to the other page, somehow Facebook disengaged. So I'll have to use a different browser in order to do this. All right, Facebook is back, guys. Don't complain. So Zurich, I gave a talk of free speech, about 20 minutes. It was interesting because all the other speeches, there were three other people really gave speeches. All the other speeches were in German. So I didn't understand a word. It was all about Western civilization, the values of Western civilization, free speech, journalism. I really gave the free speech part of it. A number of the audience members came up to me afterwards and said, we really need to learn how to give talks from you because, here in Switzerland, we always read our talks and we're always really, really, really boring. And you have passion and it's interesting and it's fascinating. And, you know, we need to learn how to give talks from you. So for a price, I'm willing to come back to Switzerland and teach whoever wants to how to give presentations. I think could make a career of that. From Zurich, let's see if I remember this. From Zurich, I flew to Prague. In Prague, there is Severo is a free market think tank that is turned into a university. It is now a degree-granting institution in Prague. And it is run by an Austrian economist, and it is focused on kind of a libertarian Austrian view of the world. And it runs undergraduate and graduate programs. And, that is really... It's a really cool setup they have. They have a building right in the old city of where they deliver these programs. And so I spoke to a class, a PPNE. PPNE is Politics, Philosophy, Economics. It's an integrated curriculum. I spoke to their class for about 2 hours. I gave a talk and a Q&A about Ayn Rand's contribution to the ideas of liberty. We talked about the idea of reason. And the importance of reason to defense of liberty, which I think they found, interesting. We talked about one other thing. You see, I can't even remember. Anyway, that was just 3 or 4 days ago, but that was in Prague. Also, I had dinner with a bunch of objectivists in Prague. That was fun, and. Got to talk to a bunch of anarcho-capitalists in Prague. It seems like in Prague, I always get to talk with anarcho-capitalists. That was, I guess, fun. I have to say, it's getting a little boring because it's so frequent that I have to, that anarcho-capitalism comes out. So it's getting a little boring. All right. Prague flew to, where did I fly? Oh, Rotterdam. Rotterdam, I gave two talks. One for students. The local libertarian group, Students for Liberty, organized a talk for me at the university in Rotterdam. Great group of kids. Had some faculty members there as well who were curious about Ayn Rand. Really good questions, really high quality questions, better questions than usual. I gave my standard talk on Morality of Capitalism. I think it's up on YouTube, or will be up on YouTube. I know they videotaped it, so it should be up on YouTube soon. Good questions. I would skip forward to the Q&A. You've probably heard most of the lecture before, but the Q&A was unique. It was good. It was particularly good and valuable. Also in Rotterdam, I did something, gave a talk, which was pretty unique. I gave a talk to a conference of finance professionals, so investment advisors, insurance companies, pension plans, bankers from investment banks. And I gave a talk about the morality of finance. And it was really cool because I got to tell them that they are heroes. I got to tell them that they're the good guys. I got to tell them that what they do is productive and what they do is moral. And you could tell that these guys have never heard anything like it. They've never, ever, ever in their whole lives been told that what they do is a good thing, that what they do is productive. You know, I told them what I believe, which is finance is essential for capitalism. You cannot have capitalism without financial institutions, and that they are essential for the creation of businesses, for creation of employment, for expansion of businesses, for the making businesses more efficient, for creative destruction. Schumpeter's idea of creative destruction. So it's, and you could tell they were like slouched in their chairs because after a whole day of boring presentations, half of them about sustainability and how to invest in sustainability projects and how they should be socially responsible in the investing. And you could tell they were pretty bored. And they started to hear me, and they all kind of sat up in their chairs, kind of suddenly a jolt of pride in what they do. And it was fun. And then a great Q&A, another really good Q&A. I don't think that was filmed, or at least I'll try to find out. In conjunction with that talk, Don Watkins and I wrote an essay on the morality of finance. That essay was translated into Dutch and is in a book that the organizer of the conference is putting out. So it's an essay with a bunch of other people and on the morality of finance. The editor complained when we submitted the chapter that it was too much Ayn Rand and not enough other moral thinkers. And anyway, we didn't change any of that. But it's cool to have a chapter in a book in Dutch. That's a first for me. First for me. Oh, by the way, in Zurich, I forgot to tell you this exciting stuff in Zurich. And I'll get to some content in a minute. I don't know. Some of you are probably bored with my recounting of these trips. But in Zurich, one of the highlights was that for the first time I got to see an actual copy of Free Market Revolution, my book with Don Watkins, in German. It's been published in German, hardback cover. And I got to sign. I got to sign my first time a copy of one of my books in German. So that was really, really, really cool. Free Market Revolution is in Greek and in German and in Chinese now. Greek, German, and Chinese. Go figure, right? The land of Kant, the land of Aristotle, and the land of Confucius. All right. So that was Rotterdam. From Rotterdam, I flew to Sofia. That's a 3-hour flight. Sofia's like out of the way. I don't know how we got into that one. Anyway, there's an Ayn Rand Center organization set up in Sofia, headed up by Colleen and doing great job trying to promote Ayn Rand's ideas in Bulgaria. Colleen has had most of Ayn Rand's books, fiction and nonfiction, translated into Bulgarian. So people in Bulgaria have an opportunity to read all the books. And he held an event there, basically a fundraiser, to try to raise money for the Ayn Rand Center in Bulgaria. And he invited to the fundraiser a bunch of the leading businessmen in Bulgaria. So we had the CEO of the second largest bank, and we had a bunch of industrialists and traders and all kinds of other businessmen. I gave a talk on the morality of capitalism and why they should support an Ayn Rand Center in Bulgaria. Some of them had read Atlas Shrugged, some of them are not. And now Colleen will have to do the hard work of going, person to person, one-on-one meetings to try to actually raise the money. And hopefully he'll get it. I mean, it'd be fantastic. Imagine if every country in the world had a little Ayn Rand Center where they were trying to the best of their ability to teach Ayn Rand, to try to get the best minds engaged in Ayn Rand's ideas. I mean, after all, that's what I'm doing, traveling all over the world, is trying to get, I'm not going to get the majority. I'm not going to change the politics in Germany. I'm not going to change the politics in Bulgaria. I'm not going to change, not in my lifetime. But if I can catch the best, the brightest, the engaged, if I can get a few kids to read Ayn Rand and have their lives changed by it, maybe they'll come to the U.S. Maybe they'll stay in their country. Maybe they'll stay in their country and become philosophers. Maybe they'll stay in their country and become intellectuals in some other field and do something important, something substantial to make the world a better place, to promote these ideas. So I'm not going to these countries in the hope that I'm going to change their politics. That's not the point. The point is to find objectivists, to encourage people to become objectivists, to join this movement and to become activists, to become intellectuals, to become thinkers, to become, some of them will become hopefully academics, to work globally. And we'll get to globalism today, globally to change the world, because I've come to the conclusion that maybe it'll still be America that has to change. But I suspect it's going to be immigrants that change America, and not Americans. And I know a bunch of you are freaking out now, or will freak out when you listen to this. I'm trashing Americans again. But America needs new fuel. It needs new ideas. It needs new people. It needs people who understand what the world is about, people who discover Ayn Rand and bring that passion, enthusiasm, maybe a better educational system than the United States has today, and come into America to help revive America. So I'm looking for those immigrants, and maybe they'll stay in their own countries, and maybe the revolution won't happen in America. That's another thing I'm coming to the conclusion of, that it might not happen in America. America is becoming less and less unique, and partially because the world is getting better, and partially because America is getting worse. All right, that was in Sofia. From Sofia, I went to Stockholm. That was yesterday. Spoke to a group of young libertarians and liberals. It was a joint event of European Students for Liberty and the Liberal Political Alliance, or something like that, of students in Sweden. And they held a whole weekend conference. And then I had a great drinks afterwards with one of my favorite intellectuals today, who's not an objectivist but pretty close. And who's a big Ayn Rand fan, Johan Norberg. I don't know if you guys follow the work of Johan Norberg, but I strongly recommend it. And he's got a new book out, which he gave me a copy of, called Progress. And it tells the story of human progress, and it explains how much better life is today. By the way, I forgot to say this. When I say liberal in Europe, it's very different than liberal in America. Liberal in Europe is free market. Not, you know, the left in America stole the word liberal, and it's still in Europe. So when I say a liberal student group, I mean a classical liberal, a liberal in the tradition of 19th century classical liberal. I had drinks with Johan Norberg, Norberg, who is a really good guy, He has a position at Cato. He writes, particularly in Sweden, but he writes also in the United States. You can see him in Bloomberg and other places. He also has a TV show. This is pretty amazing. He has a TV show on PBS about his book Progress. So he's like the modern Milton Friedman, in the sense of getting on PBS with a TV show that is unapologetically pro free markets and capitalism. And he's got this book out, Progress. And one of the things I like about Johan is he's focused on the positive. That is, he's focused on all the ways in which our world is a wonderful place. He's focused on all the ways in which we've made unbelievable progress over the last 50 years. The exact opposite of what the left and the right and the Donald Trump right have been saying over and over again about how horrible life is, how stagnant our economy's been, how there's no progress. We've gone nowhere. We've achieved nothing. And as I've done on this show, particularly on the show when I talked about Silicon Valley and other things. Other times I praise technology, major, particularly if you take a global perspective. The show, by the way, on PBS is called Dead Wrong. Particularly if you look at the global progress that has been made over the last 50 years. It's just unbelievable, and it's wonderful, and it's something to celebrate, and it's something to cheer about. And he has this hypothesis that I thought was pretty cool. He gave a talk to the Stockholm student group about this, and it's basically idea was that part of the reason for the rise of this populist right or so-called right, you know, the Donald Trump, but also Geert Wilders and everybody in the populist Democratic Party in Sweden, is the perception that stuff is so horrible, that life is so miserable, that we are in massive economic, cultural, technological decline, and the exaggeration of all the risks that exist in the world. Yeah, not to diminish the risk that Islam poses. But I've said it over and over again. This is not a substantial risk. This is a risk that could be eliminated in weeks, if not months, by fighting a proper war. There is no war of civilizations because the Muslims don't have a civilization to fight. And you know, I've talked about this ad nauseum, and I'll talk about it more in the future because it's so important to get this right. A war is essential. A proper war is essential. Crushing these bastards is essential. Crushing these mystics is essential. But let's not live in fear, particularly not in the United States. I mean, there's much more fear to be had in Europe than there is in the United States. But anyway, yeah. I mean, people generally think that we're all getting poorer. People think that violence is up. People think that the world is getting – and it's not. We're not getting poor. The world is actually getting much richer. But even in America, we're getting richer. And the world is safer than it's ever been in human history. It's safer than it's ever been. Yeah, it's not safe enough. Let's destroy the Islamic threat so that it's even safer. But let's not, you know, become so fearful and adopt this cult of fear that then we need a strong man to come and save us from. We need a strong leader to and building walls. I mean, building walls is the ultimate sign of defeatism. Of you know, who are we? Who, you know, walls are supposed to. Supposedly, we're building a wall to protect ourselves from whom? Who's hurting us? Yeah. We've got some crazy, evil Muslims who take their religion too seriously and who are out there killing Americans. You got to take care of that. You got to take care of that. But we have not yet been invaded by an army. And indeed, again, if you crush them in the Middle East, if you destroy them, if you annihilate the spearhead of all this, the where they come from, deal with ISIS, and then with Saudi Arabia and Iran, domestic terrorism will disappear because nobody commits suicide for a losing cause. Nobody commits suicide for a losing cause. So, you know, I think this despair, this fear, it leads people to do stupid things. It leads people to do and we'll talk about this in terms of the news and the media. It's the same thing. People are so disgusted by the mainstream media that they go find ridiculous sources and pretend that they are true because they reinforce their biases, they reinforce their prejudices, they reinforce their fears more than anything else. What they're really reinforcing is their fears. All right. Anyway, since after Stockholm, I flew to Berlin today. Here I am. I've had meetings with people here in Berlin. I had dinner with Philip Dahmer. I had dinner with Philip Dahmer, who has translated. This is amazing, guys. This is truly amazing. Just like Colin has translated all of Ayn Rand's books into Bulgarian, Philip is translating all of Ayn Rand's books into German, has translated them all, and now he's finding publishers, and they're being published. So we've got Virtue of Selfishness. We've got Anthem. Atlas Shrugged is already in German. He translated Free Market Revolution. I'm missing a couple of other books. And then on the way, A Capitalism Not Known Ideal and the Anti-Industrial Revolution, but the new name escapes my mind right now. But Ayn Rand's book of essays on basically the environmentalist movement with some essays from Peter Schwartz. I mean, Philip is doing an unbelievable job in Germany bringing these books to a German. Oh, I know. The book that's most exciting, Return of the Primitive was the book I forgot its name. But the book that's most exciting was The Ominous Parallels. Finally, Germans get an explanation for what happened to them. Not to them, but to their parents and grandparents. But the idea that you would have in Germany, all these books in Germany, you have The Ominous Parallels of Germany, is incredibly exciting, right? Incredibly exciting. So here I am in Berlin. I from here I go to Copenhagen, and on Wednesday night in Copenhagen, I'll be doing a talk with Fleming Rose. Fleming Rose is the publisher of the Danish Cartoons. A friend of mine, we've been friendly since 2006 when we met, when we were at the Ayn Rand Institute. We were doing panels on the Danish cartoons at American universities, and we'd blown up the cartoons and showed them all over the place. And he participated in those panels. And since then, when I go to Copenhagen, we typically meet and have dinner or have drinks. He's a great guy. And we're doing a panel together on free speech. And, you know, what more important an issue to do? And of course, he is the guy who published the Danish cartoons. I mean, he knows what he's doing. He knows what he's talking about. He's one of the most important people out there. He's written a book on the decline of free speech in Europe. He is not an objectivist, but certainly an ally of ours. And it's really fun and exciting to be able to do events with him. So that'll be Wednesday in Copenhagen, and we're doing it at the Parliament Building. Because originally we had scheduled to do it at a bar somewhere, but, you know, you got to watch security. And hopefully we'll be more secure at the Parliament Building. We're expecting a good-sized audience for that talk. From there, I fly back to South Florida. And on Saturday, I'll be giving a talk to Turning Point USA. Turning Point USA is a student organization, a student movement focused on conservative and many libertarian students, trying to get them involved and engaged, very political. But it's a good group, and I'll be doing a debate there with some leftist professor on a variety of different topics, but basically on capitalism and covering a number of different issues that relate to capitalism. So this is the trip. I hope you find all these updates interesting. You know, there's not much to say about the particular countries. This is Europe. It's collectivist. It's statist. Politically, what you're seeing in all these countries, particularly in Sweden and in Netherlands, you're seeing the rise of a populist right, an anti-immigration, but really anti-free trade, anti-Eurozone, anti-capitalist kind of right, which is fairly scary. Remember, at the end of the day, the right and the left are joining forces here, and this is what's so scary. It is the left that is primarily the anti-immigration side, always has been, and always has promoted anti-immigration, of course, anti-trade, and now the right has adopted the same thing. So, again, let me say this. I am not left. I am not right. Objectivism is not left. It's not right. It's a different dimension. The real categorization today in the world, the real split in the world, is between collectivists and individualists, between collectivism and individualism, between statism and capitalism. And we've got collectivists who appear to be leftists. We've got collectivists who appear to be rightists. We've got collectivists who are centrists. We've got collectivists all across the board. The progressives are just another form of collectivists, right? And what we are is individualists. And we have allies here and there. Not many. And shrinking. But people like Fleming Rose, people like Johan Norberg, and there are many others who are real allies in this fight, who are petrified, who are really scared about the political machinations that are happening in the world today. And this is the battle. The battle is for individualism. The battle is for individualism, and it's a battle we are struggling with. All right. If you want to call in, you can call in. Hey, even though I'm in Berlin, you can still call in. 347-324-3075. Those of you in Facebook Live, you can call in as well. 347-324-3075. Questions, comments, suggestions. 347-324-3075. Just don't talk for too long, because if you do, the people on Facebook Live can't hear you. I still don't have that all connected, but I've got a sound engineer coming in a week and a half to try to fix it. Okay, 347-324-3075, and then you have to press 1, so I know that you want to ask a question. Okay, we're going to take a quick break here, and all right, and oh, I see a question. Well, I'm going to take the question when we get back, but the other thing we're going to talk about when I get back is I want to talk about false news, about objective consumption of media. I want to talk more about what we talked about 2 weeks ago, because it, all this fake news has really hit the news. I was a little early on this with my show 2 weeks ago, and there's some good commentary that I want to recommend to you that you go read on this issue. And so we'll do that when I come back right after these messages.
You can see for yourself the day-in, day-out assault on reason throughout our culture. Collectivism, socialism, and an ineffective foreign policy are the direct result of the bad philosophy that all too many people, including our leaders, currently hold. The only antidote to bad ideas is better ideas. The only way to reverse the irrational philosophy we see everywhere is to fight for the right philosophy. That's Ayn Rand's philosophy, objectivism, which proudly upholds reason, self-interest, and capitalism. ARI fights every day in defense of your values. We proudly uphold rationality, productiveness, and freedom. But we cannot do it alone. Join us in this critical fight. Support ARI today. Visit www.aynrand.org/support to learn more. That's www.aynrand.org/support. Thank you.
Free speech is under attack. Islamic totalitarians repeatedly threaten and kill those who offend them, while our leaders appease the attackers and blame the victims. College students seek trigger warnings and safe spaces to protect them from controversial ideas. The government harasses Tea Party groups for their political speech, and it investigates oil companies and advocacy groups for dissenting from climate change orthodoxy. Why is this happening? What can be done? Find answers in ARI's new book, Defending Free Speech, by me, Steve Simpson. Order it today on Amazon.
Join the 40,000 subscribers already connecting with ARI through our newsletter, Impact Weekly. You'll learn about our programs and discover our distinct perspective on today's most talked about issues. Whether you're a student interested in getting updates on ARI's essay contest, an Ayn Rand fan looking for ARI events in your area, or if you're simply looking to learn more about ARI's activities around the country and what we're doing to advance freedom, Impact Weekly is your go-to source for these and other timely updates. Visit aynrand.org/signup today.
15 years off to September 11th, Islamic totalitarianism is undefeated and on the march from Paris and San Bernardino to Brussels and Orlando. Our military strength is unmatched, and yet Islamic totalitarianism is still a menace. Why? ARI's new book, Failing to Confront Islamic Totalitarianism, From George W. Bush to Barack Obama and Beyond, addresses this very question and the fundamental problem at its core. The book, a collection of essays from ARI experts Ankar Ghate and me, Ilan Jurno, highlights the irrational philosophic ideas that permeate and subvert American foreign policy. While the United States is indeed a military superpower, it lacks the moral certainty needed to defend itself and its ideals, and our political intellectual leaders evade the true nature of Islamic totalitarianism. After 9/11, ARI predicted that the prevailing ideas about morality would undercut our foreign policy, ultimately crippling us. Sadly, those predictions have proven to be correct. We can end the Islamist menace and secure our right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, easily in fact. But we must adopt the right philosophic ideas to guide the way. Pick up your copy of Failing to Confront Islamic Totalitarianism at Amazon today to learn more about this life or death issue.
For 30 years, the Ayn Rand Institute has been on the front lines of the culture wars, introducing millions of students to Ayn Rand's books and ideas, educating young intellectuals who now teach at universities around the world, and speaking out in defense of free speech, free markets, free minds. You can join their battle for reason, individualism, and capitalism here and around the nation by making your contribution today at AynRand.org/support. That's AynRand.org/support.
All right, we're back, and let's see, Facebook Live is not quite live yet, but any second now, it should be back. We're back on Facebook Live, and we're back here. You didn't miss anything on Facebook Live. It was just a commercial break, and I decided to disconnect you to save on bandwidth, because it's going to be close. We might just squeeze under the gigabyte if we do this effectively. Of course, I could lower the quality of your video and get to you that way, but I don't know. All right, we're going to take a phone call quickly, and then we're going to go on. Hi, this is Yvonne Book Show. Who's this?
Merry Christmas, Dr. Book. This is Skylar from Delaware.
Hey, Skylar, how's it going?
Going very well, sir.
Good, good. What's up?
I was wondering, may I ask two questions or just limit to one?
Ask two quick ones.
Okay. The first one is, how proper would it be for the Ayn Rand Institute to start its own news service, not just op-eds, but actual, you know, straight news? And my other question is, what is your view on, like, the queen and royalty and things of that nature? Do you respect them? Are you indifferent towards them? That'd be all.
All right.
Thank you.
Great. I'm going to take you offline, and I'm going to answer both your questions. Let me start with the queen. Because that's an easy one, and it's not really related to the topic today. So let's get that out of the way. I don't have any respect for royalty. None. Zero. Zilch. You know, I've heard that Ayn Rand might have had something about – I really don't have any. I don't get it. I don't get why anybody would respect a monarch. I don't get what's interesting about a monarch. I don't get what's cool about being a monarch. I think it's pretty ridiculous. So I don't get the whole thing. Zero, nothing. I believe very much that the monarchy represents all men are not created equal. All men are not equal. Equality before the law, I mean, equality of rights. They above us, and so I've never liked aristocracy, and I've never liked, and I know Ayn Rand has a certain romantic view of aristocracy, literarily at least, as portrayed in her in her novels. I get what she's getting at. I get that sense of nobility, but with aristocracy historically, I don't know that it was earned, with particularly with queens and kings. All right, so the other question is relevant to our discussion. So Skylar wants to know, would it be proper for ARI to create its own news service, to become a news organization, to provide news? Maybe what you really mean is to filter the news, to go out there and to filter the news and to provide a service of providing what we believe is objective and accurate news, because it's two different things. To be a real news service, one would have to have reporters. One would have to have people out there going out for stories and going and doing investigative reporting, but also going out and being in the places where the news is happening and asking questions and doing interviews and actually engaging it. It's a whole profession. Journalism is an entire profession, and it's not a trivial profession. So, and I don't think that would be appropriate. I don't think that would be appropriate for the Ayn Rand Institute to do. We are not a news organization, and we're not going to hire journalists. And what's a comparative advantage other than a good epistemology? But then you'd have to find a bunch of people with good epistemology. I mean, one of you should do it, right? One of you should start the objective newsroom or the objective newspaper. And it's a great name, right, for a newspaper, and go out there and deliver the news. And remember, the news is the news. It's not opinion. It's not slanted. It's what's happening in the world right now. Good guys, bad guys, things that are going on that you think are important. Now, the filtering of what you think is important is a lot of what a news organization does and a lot of what's important about a news organization. But no, I don't think that's appropriate. And in terms of filtering the news, again, I just don't think that's what the Institute is about. The Institute is about philosophy. It's about commentary on the news. It's not about providing you with news. So I do think there is room for an objectivist who knows what they're doing. That's really important. Maybe in a blog or something like that, to create a website like Drudge or something, right, that filters the news, that provides a source that people can go to where they have a certain level of trust and confidence in what they are reading. And I think that would be a great value, because most people don't have the time to filter through what is true and what is false. But then more than that, it's what is slanted and how it's slanted. Maybe this person who put this website together could actually give a little commentary on each piece. Not an analysis, but a little commentary. This is from a leftist news source. You know, it's a little slanted, but there's some really interesting things here. It's worth reading. Or this is from a right-wing source. So this is, you know, give a little bit of just orientation. But it would filter for both truth and, you know, and a certain level of bias or filter against that level of bias, that is, and warn people about the bias in a particular piece and where it's coming from, and teach people to be good consumers of news, which I think people, I used to think they were pretty good at, but it's turned out they're not very good at all. So that would be interesting. I mean, that would be interesting for somebody to do. It would have to be like a news junkie. You could probably make money doing it. You could sell advertising. You could sell subscriptions. There's a number of different things, that you could do about that. And I'm not talking about somewhere that analyzes it philosophically or chats about it. I'm just talking about a news website that gives quick things and that does it on all the news, and it does it every day in an intensive way. I don't think there is such a thing. Certainly nothing like this run by an objectivist. Think Drudge with a little bit of commentary. I actually think that would be, I mean, an objective Drudge, right? I don't think Drudge is objective at all, but that would be really interesting, and I think that would be really valuable. And somebody should actually do it. And I actually know some people who might be willing to put money into it. If you would like to do it, and you'd like to meet some money people, maybe this could be a good startup to do. And maybe there's some clever technology you can use to make it particularly effective. But I really think that is a real service that one can provide, not just objectivists, but generally for people out there who are looking for a more objective view of the news, somebody to filter the news for you, that takes out all the garbage in a sense of things that aren't on news. I don't know, the equivalent of cat videos that, you know, that sometimes the news organizations focus on. And at the same time, also filter out the stuff that's just not true, but also that's so biased that it can be done. So that would be a lot of work. You'd have to build a whole organization around it. This is not something you can do by yourself. This is a lot of work, because you'd really have to be putting your name out there. And it's not just selecting a few pieces of news. This would be the news, which is dozens of items a day. I think that would be terrific. I think that would be exciting. I think that would be something really, really valuable. Not for ARI to do. That's not our job. But for one of you, right? One of you. This is you could apply for an Objectivist Venture Fund grant to do it. So there's money to be had, an Objectivist Venture Fund grant. I could, you know, I'd support that if you were somebody credible and had the epistemological skill to be able to do the work. I don't think the work is easy, but again, I don't know that any of the newsletters or any of the bulletin board type things or discussion groups really do this. It's just one thing. You just look at the news and show it. You link to the actual news and you have a little bit of minor commentary about it. So all the power to you. Go, somebody should go do this. All right. One quick other call and then I want to get to this, the topic of today. Hi, you're on the Yuan Book Show. Who's this?
Aloha. It's Stuart.
Yeah. Hello, Stuart. How's it going?
Oh, it's going great. And, good. You know, I think I get so worried when people say, you know, they repeat Trump saying Americanism, not globalism, because I think that this republic was founded on the principle of openness to, you know, to foreigners, to trade. It's even in the Declaration of Independence.
Yep. Yeah. No, absolutely. So Stuart is talking about globalism versus Americanism. Okay, Stuart, I'm gonna take you off thing, and I'm gonna talk a little bit. So let's talk a little bit about this idea of globalism versus Americanism before I get to a discussion of more of the media and false news and all of that. Because I wanted to do this last time a couple of weeks ago and didn't really get an opportunity because I'm afraid I might miss out on it today as well if I don't handle it head on. So I always took globalism to mean kind of globalization, the open trade, open immigration, open travel, but not open immigration necessarily, you know, open borders. I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon, but just the greater flow of people, the free flow of capital, the free flow of goods across the world, relative free trade, relative hospitality, something to immigrants and a free flow of capital and just a general sense that, hey, the world's a cool place. Traveling is good. Going to see other cultures is good. Doesn't mean all cultures are the same. Western civilization is superior. And indeed, Western civilization is taking roots in places like Japan, to some extent, certainly in China and in other countries, not perfectly. But then again, it was never perfect in the West. So the idea that every individual in the world has individual rights, that the sanctity of life is true everywhere, that you shouldn't expect me to sacrifice somebody across the world. I don't sacrifice to my neighbor either. Don't expect sacrifice, period. And don't expect me to respect foreign culture as much as I respect the culture that is the foundation of the West. But at the same time, a curiosity about other cultures and an interest in the virtues of other cultures when they have those virtues, and some cultures do have virtues. So a general openness to the world, a curiosity and openness and embracing of the world. That's how I always view globalism. Not in a multicultural sense of all countries or all cultures are the same. I've never believed that, and I didn't think globalism referred to that. But it turns out that the way, and I guess I don't know if this is coming from the alt-right, and it certainly the alt-right has embraced this and has really pushed the idea that that's not what globalism is, Yaron. Globalism is the idea of global governance, the idea of world government, the idea of inflicting on the entire world a certain leftist ideology, a leftist ideology that's very multiculturalist. So globalism stands for multiculturalism and the equality of all cultures, or indeed the superiority of any culture other than the West. That the West is the inferior, the colonizing, the one that is evil. And so. The idea of globalism is now morphed the way it's being used by people, even by Donald Trump, I think, when he talks about globalism or people around Donald Trump or people on the right generally. It's now this idea that there's a vast conspiracy to subjugate the United States to global rule. And usually the global rule is going to be from the UN. And, you know, this is connected to Agenda 21, which is this environmentalist agenda that is being pushed by the left, and it really is being pushed into local governments in the United States and everywhere else. So there really is a problem. But is it a problem So the idea is there's a conspiracy, and this is articulated in places like InfoWars. By the way, a despicable place. I mean, I don't know if you've ever gone to InfoWars.com, but wow. Anybody who takes InfoWars seriously, anybody who consumes any kind of media from InfoWars, I mean, that's nutty, people. That is nutty. Those guys are crazy nuts. I mean, they think 9/11 is a conspiracy. So I mean, that's just – it doesn't get any nuttier than that. Anyway, so globalism has taken on this it's a package deal. And it's a package deal that has packaged together the idea of free trade, the idea of free movement of capital, the idea of more immigration or some freedom in immigration, with the idea of global governance, with the idea that there's a conspiracy to take over the world, whether it's through the UN or some other entity. It depends on the particular conspiracy you're involved in. It's the idea that they are trying to impose their will on all on government in the United States, that Hillary Clinton was part of this, and that's why it would have been the end of America if she had won. So this is the package deal, right, of things that are really global, that are good, that are involved in what has been always called globalization, which, by the way, has resulted in massive exports of Western civilization to the rest of the world and a vast, fantastic improvement in their standard of living. Globalization, which is trade, immigration, and capital, and free movement of people, tourism, the Berlin Wall coming down, people being able to travel around the world without visas. I mean, all or relatively easy to travel with visas, like relatively easy to get a visa to China or even to Russia or places or Brazil or places like that for an American. That a legitimate form of globalization with the illegitimate world governance, world control, leftist ideology, statist, leftist, collectivist ideology crammed down our throats by a world government, which is obviously a bad thing. So am I for globalism or not for globalism? Well, I'm not for the package deal. I'm for all those things I mentioned that are positives, and all those other things are insane. And of course I'm not for, so people accuse me of being globalist. They're accusing me. I realize now, it took me a while. I'm slow, but I'm learning. You guys are teaching me. I'm learning slowly. That what they're really accusing me of is being a proponent of world government, which is insane. But it's the package deal. And the package deal creates real cognitive dissonance. It creates real difficulty in holding onto the truth. It's hard to tell. What am I talking about? I don't know what I'm talking about. So, you know, many of the racists talk about Jewish world government or other world government, but the idea is that there's a conspiracy out there to take over the world. And look, this is the thing with some of these conspiracies. They're elements of truth in them. So there is no question that the left would like the UN to have a bigger role in governance in the United States. There's no question that there are people out there that would like to the reins of United States government to be taken away from people like George W. Bush, who they consider a warmonger, and given to the UN and have all the important decisions passed by the UN. There's no question that people would like a coordination of all environmental policies across the entire globe, and that a lot of the trade deals have done that and are motivated by that. It's not a major feature of them. It's not what's important about those trade deals, but it's part of them. So it's true that there are intellectuals out there who believe that the states should be eliminated in favor of a big super state that is run purely democratically, and that the United States need to redistribute all its wealth to the rest of the world because we exploited everybody else, and that's how we became rich. All of that exists. All of those ideas are out there. That's not what those of us who believe in free trade believe in. And it's dishonest to claim it is. It's the other way around, but that we do believe in it. But so there needs to be a term for these conspiracy theory and these advocates for world governance, for global governance. But it's not globalism in the sense of free trade, right? It's not globalization. And many of those people, you know, don't believe in free trade between individuals. They don't believe in free trade at any level. you know, it's really, really, these are leftists who all they want is to constrain our freedom, to constrain our ability to trade. So to lump them in with free traders is absurd and ridiculous, and discredits anybody who makes these claims. So globalism is a package deal. It means nothing. It's stupid. And it's just meant to confuse. It's just meant to confuse. Free trade is good. Let me say that again. Free trade is good, unequivocally good, unapologetically good. And what we have today in America is today we have the lowest tariffs we've ever had in American history, the closest we have ever had to free trade. This is a good thing. This is a wonderful thing. This is something to be celebrated. Not to be lumped in with some conspiracy theory nuts or lumped in with leftists who would like to have world government who don't care one iota about trade. You've got to separate the two things out. A global integration on an economic level is good. In that sense, the European project, the European Union, if it had stuck to no barriers to goods, capital, or people, open immigration across all members of the European Union, free movement of capital all across the European Union, free movement of goods all across the European Union. If they stuck to that and not try to establish European governance in a sense of common regulations and common currency and common a bunch of other things, it would have been a beautiful project. It would have been one of the greatest achievements ever. And indeed, to the extent that there is free movement of people, free movement of capital, free movement of goods in the European Union is a success and has benefited everybody who's participated in it. To that extent, the danger comes from Brussels that wants to govern these countries. And, you know, if they wanted to govern it well, all right, that'd be fine. But they want to govern it. The governance that they want to impose is a governance of statism, of socialism, of government intervention, of crushing economic success. And that's why Brexit was good. I wish Brexit, the British, could keep the free trade of goods, labor, and people, and just eliminate the regulations and the governance that comes from Brussels. But I don't think they can separate the two, unfortunately. Brussels won't let them, and I don't think they want to. They don't want real free trade. I wish they did. The world since World War II, the world, including the United States of America, has benefited enormously economically from free trade, including NAFTA and the WTO and all these so-called conspiracy theories. And could NAFTA be better? Absolutely. Just lower tariffs to zero and get rid of NAFTA. I'm all for that. Could some of these other things be better? Sure. But it would require not raising tariffs, but reducing them even further. All right. All right. It looks like we're reducing the speed of the video for you guys on. I think the telecom company did it automatically in order to preserve my data, so it's reduced the speed. So we'll see. Maybe we'll have enough data to run the whole show. We've got another 25 minutes. All right. So I want to be clear. This concept of globalism as a package deal, it's an illegitimate concept. Stop using it in any way, form, or shape. Now, what does Americanism mean? I love the term Americanism, right? But again, Americanism has become a package deal as used by others. Again, a package deal is where you take legitimate content and illegitimate content that might even contradict the legitimate content, usually does, and put them together in the same concept, and thus create a concept that actually doesn't mean anything, that cannot be integrated, and therefore is meaningless. So you take the concept of Americanism. Now, what does the concept of Americanism mean? To me, the concept of Americanism means the idea of limited government based on individualism, based on the protection of individual rights, and the spirit of entrepreneurship, the spirit of the pursuit of happiness, the spirit of taking responsibility for your own life that engenders and that assumes. That's what Americanism means. Americanism doesn't mean the greatness of the piece of land that's called America, or even the greatness of the people within that piece of land called America. It doesn't mean separation from the rest of the world. It means a spirit of individualism. It means a political system of individual rights. Again, manifest in the kind of entrepreneurship, the kind of pioneering, the kind of independence that Americans have always exhibited. That's what Americanism is. And it contrasts with collectivism, with nationalism. But what they're doing today is they're taking Americanism, make America great again, and they're lumping into that term Americanism, the collectivism, the xenophobia, the building a wall around the country, the rejection of immigration, the rejection of individual rights. Right? This is all about package dealing. By the way, I strongly recommend that you go and read in the Introduction to Objectivist Epistemology about package dealing, in OPA about package dealing, and Peter Schwartz's excellent lectures on package dealing. You can find those at the eStore, at the Ayn Rand Institute. This is such an important concept, this idea of concepts that are package deals and the illegitimacy of concepts that are package deals. And so much of the world today is filled with these kind of package deals. So we have got to get rid. You know, if you talk about Americanism, define what you're talking about. Right? Define what you're talking about. What does it actually mean? What's the definition? You know, instead, what they're doing today is they're making it fuzzy. They're making it, you know, they're failing to discriminate crucial differences that exist between ideas. You're treating in a package things that are contradictory, things that are not the same in their nature or importance or value. Like collectivism, America, Americans, the value, the placing them above the individual, and individualism. And the individualism. So beware of being caught up in these ideas, right? Nationalism is a form of collectivism. It's the placement of the nation above the individual. And to the extent, that's what these people are advocating. It is evil. It is wrong. One has to exclude it. And if Americanism is nationalism, then Americanism is a bad concept. But Americanism has a good meaning. It means the opposite of nationalism. It means individualism. It means the defense of individual rights. It means capitalism. And in that sense, one can use it. It's a legitimate concept. All right. We're going to take another quick break. I'm going to try to fix the Facebook Live so we can do the last half hour. And I will be right back after this break.
Creating a better future requires that we do all we can right now to teach young people the right ideas. Classrooms today are beset with irrationality and collectivism. Colleges and universities are hotbeds of socialism and multiculturalism. And even worse, they continue to embrace policies that threaten to stifle alternative views. Each day, ARI makes steady progress in changing the direction of our culture. Help us to continue to inform, educate, and inspire a new generation of leaders. Future intellectuals and activists need your help. Your contribution to ARI in any amount matters greatly in our mission to support the next generation of advocates for reason and liberty. You can help now by visiting www.aynrand.org/support. That's www.aynrand.org/support. Thank you.
Ayn Rand was a radical thinker whose philosophical novels challenged students to reconsider their views on fundamental issues. The Fountainhead, Atlas Shrugged, and Anthem. These works have become classics of American literature that never fail to engage young people and stimulate intense classroom discussion. By offering these works for free to teachers, the Ayn Rand Institute hopes to encourage greater awareness and understanding of Rand's stimulating perspective. If you're a teacher who would like Ayn Rand's books in your classroom, visit AynRand.org. This is at no cost to you. Go to AynRand.org today.
When The Fountainhead was first published more than 70 years ago, Ayn Rand's bold literary vision and groundbreaking philosophy of individualism captured the world's attention. Initially rejected by 12 publishers as too intellectual, the novel became an instant classic and continues to provoke heated debates. What motivates a creative thinker? Is it a selfless desire to benefit mankind, a hunger for fame, fortune, and accolades, the need to prove superiority, or is it a self-sufficient drive to pursue a creative vision independent of others' needs or opinions? Ayn Rand addresses these questions through her portrayal of Howard Roark, an innovative architect who, as she puts, struggles for the integrity of his creative work against every form of social opposition. It's also the story of his love affair with a woman who seeks to defeat him. The Fountainhead is as relevant today as it was when Rand first penned it. The novel was also a personal landmark for Rand. In Howard Roark, she presented for the first time the uniquely Ayn Rand hero, man as he could be and ought to be. Order your copy today at Amazon.com.
Calling all students. Did you know that each year the Ayn Rand Institute offers essay contests on Ayn Rand's novels Anthem, The Fountainhead, and Atlas Shrugged? If you haven't read one of these inspiring works yet, now is the time. This year, more than 550 prizes and $90,000 in cash are being awarded. Here's what you want to do before you enter. 1. Visit AynRand.org and view essay contest questions, rules, eligibility requirements, and deadlines. 2. Choose a book and start reading. Immerse yourself in one of Rand's thought-provoking novels and explore the characters, themes, and the unique world she creates. 3. Write your essay. Select one of the three topics presented and get to work. Visit AynRand.org today to learn more about this unique opportunity and for your chance to win up to $20,000. Good luck.
For more than 30 years, the Ayn Rand Institute has fought to promote ideas that I am sure you too hold dear. The power of reason, the virtue of selfishness, and the moral superiority of capitalism. What you're hearing in today's broadcast barely scratches the surface when it comes to everything ARI is doing right now to advance Ayn Rand's ideas throughout the culture. Stay informed about ARI's programs, plans, and successes as a contributor to the Ayn Rand Institute. A contribution of just $50 will ensure that you receive Impact Quarterly, ARI's hard copy 16-page newsletter. Impact Quarterly contains information available nowhere else. Don't miss the next issue. Contribute now at www.aynrand.org/support. Once again, that's www.aynrand.org/support. Thank you.
All right. Well, I mean, trying to buy more data, but it doesn't seem to be successful. So I think we'll just have to leave it at that. No more Facebook Live today. Sorry, guys. All right. Well, we talked about nationalism and Americanism. We talked about globalism, and so I want to again emphasize how careful you have to be in using these words and using these terms and in the assumptions behind them and the kind of package deals they are, right? It's not nationalistic to say, I'm an American. It's nationalistic to say, you know, that the individual doesn't count, what counts is the state. It's nationalistic to say, it's okay to use coercion for the sake of the state. That the state needs jobs. America needs jobs. That's stupid. Right? America doesn't need anything. It's not the role of government. It's not the role of government to create jobs. The role of government is to stop destroying jobs. That's certainly the case. But this whole carrier deal is you know, that's nationalism. That's placing some kind of nationalistic standard, jobs in America, above the freedom of carrier to put put its plant anywhere it sees fit above the freedom of the citizens of Indiana not to have their money go to subsidize the jobs of other citizens in Indiana and not to go to favor one particular company over other companies, one particular industry over another other industries. So, you know, Carrier, so I'll just say this, and then I want to say a little bit about media because we don't have a lot of time. The Carrier deal is fascinating because cronyism has always, you know, has existed in the United States for a long time, and the left is certainly a master at cronyism, and so is the right. You know, there's been cronyism forever, all the time. Usually, it's under the table. Right. Sometimes it's up front, like farm subsidies and ethanol senator, which was Bob Dole, and so on. But often even then, they need to come have excuses and they're apologetic and nobody's for cronyism until Donald Trump. I mean, Donald Trump has turned cronyism from something you do under the table in quiet in lawyers' offices in deals in Congress into a point of pride. Done in the public square before everybody. And in that sense, maybe it's good. Maybe it's good that we have this discussion about, for example, giving a tax break to a particular company. Is that a good thing, a right thing? No, it's not. It's not. If you're going to give a tax break, you have to give a tax break to everybody. This is not treating everybody equally before the law. This is the rule, not of laws, but of men. Of people. This is exactly what the founders were against. It's exactly what freedom stands in opposition to. Yeah, it's cool to pay fewer taxes for you as an individual. But what's so special about you? If the government's treating you special, it means it could penalize you tomorrow. The government has no right. And it's not even an issue of cutting spending on the other side. You cannot give one individual or one company or one industry tax benefits at the expense of tax benefits, period. Put aside the expense. At the end, it's an expense because they don't cut spending. So somebody has to pay for it. Somebody else's taxes have to go up. But you don't give tax breaks to one person. And I think all the exclusions and all the deductions, all of that is immoral. It's immoral because it's shaping your behavior. It's saying, threatening to move your plant overseas, that's good. We're going to reward you for that. But staying or actually moving, that's bad. So we're going to penalize you for that. Taxes, to the extent that they have to exist because the government today has, you know, has all these obligations, it's going to have to spend this money. It's taxes. We have to fight for a fair tax system. And fair, I mean, that sounds like a contradiction in terms, but a tax system that is not used to manipulate our behavior, a tax system that does not pick winners and losers, a tax system that does not give to some and take from others. But if you have to raise a certain amount, you should spread it equally. No, it's not just that they're being robbed less. It's that other people are being robbed more in order to cover them being robbed less. Yeah, I get that. I get the Carrier is going to be enthusiastic about it. But it's not right. It's not just. It's not just a manipulation. It's the fact that the government is not treating everybody equally before the law. It's the legal issue that is the most important. We don't have equal rights. Carrier has a little bit more rights. They get a tax break. We don't. I'm all for tax breaks. I'm for lowering all the taxes, but on everybody, not selectively, not on who bribes you, not on who does you favors. This is the epitome of cronyism and distortion and inequality before the law. It means the government can do anything. And this, of course, Obama started with what he did with Chrysler and all these other places, right? Contracts don't matter anymore. Laws don't matter anymore. I can just pick and choose. I'm the great dictator. And this is what American politics have become, the rule of men instead of the rule of laws. So the law is a corporate income tax is 35%. Then everybody should pay 35%. If you get a special favor, that is discrimination, discrimination before the law. That is, you're getting a favor. Now, again, it's not exactly a favor because you get to keep your money. But why you get to keep it and everybody else doesn't get to keep it? So it's selective stealing now. I think it's very, very wrong, and it should be stopped, right? I mean, particularly corporate taxes should be just zero, right? Corporate taxes are stupid. But taxes are not going to go to zero. But at least let's make them so that they're reasonably not being used to give favors, not being used as manipulations. All right. I want to talk about this. I don't have a lot of time, so I'm not going to talk much about it, but I want to talk about this fake news stuff. And what I really want to do is recommend to you a few articles. I want to recommend Ben Baer, B-A-Y-E-R. He's written an article called The Sniff Test, Developing a Critical Nose for the News. And it's an article that then has follow-ups, kind of the details on follow-up stories. And he's published two of the follow-ups already. They're going to be five in total. One is called What is the Source of the Story and What to Do About It? The second is How Likely is the Story to be True in the First Place? The third, which hasn't come out yet, but will come out in the next few days, is the story. If the story were true, what else would be true? Which is basically encouraging you to integrate. And four, does the story represent it? And five, why do I want to believe it is true? Why would someone else want to believe it's true? So helping you filter the falsehood, the deception from actual news. And I think the series of articles is excellent. I highly recommend. I think there's a lot to say about this beyond these articles, but this is a great start. And the suggestions that Ben is making are right in line. Just to give you a sense of how shocking this is to many of you will be, he comes out basically recommending that you use the mainstream media as your primary source of news. I agree with that. If you count the Wall Street Journal, NPR, The Atlantic, and other sources that I use, I mainly use the mainstream media because I can adjust for their bias and they actually report news. They don't report all the news. So you, particularly if you want specialized stuff, if you want to know more about jihad, if you want to know more about what Muslims are doing to Europe, if you want to know more about things like that, there are websites that specialize in that, and they're very good at that. If you want to know what's really going on in Venezuela, the mainstream media is not going to give you the full story. It gives you elements of the full story. I've read some really good stories about Venezuela in the mainstream media. But if you want to really delve into it, there are sites that specialize in that. If you want to know what really happened in Cuba and the history of Cuba, there are sites that specialize in that, and then there are books. But even when you read the specialized sites, you have to be careful. And let me make this point, and then I want to give you some TV show recommendations. You gotta, you know, so many of us consume news that we start obsessing about the news. So I've noticed a number of people on Facebook, I won't mention names, but a number of people on Facebook, nominally objectivists, who consider themselves objectivists, who become obsessed with a particular topic, like Islam. Islam is the biggest problem in the world today. Islam is going to take over the world. We have to build a wall because of Islam. We have to, Islam is everywhere. They're taking over Europe. They're taking over America. They're invading America. They're all these cities in America. The Sharia law is being infiltrated everywhere. And they're in Latin America. This is the number one threat for civilization is Islam. Now, I happen to disagree with that. I think collectivism is the number one threat to civilization in the world today, not Islam. And then they find all the news to confirm this. And there are tons of websites that just – and a lot of the stuff that these websites are saying is true. But it's out of proportion. It's out of any context, right? And they don't read anything else. So, for example, there's plenty of evidence that Muslims in America, as compared to Muslims in Europe, are assimilating. They're quite assimilated well in America. They're not assimilating at all in Europe, right? But they ignore any evidence to suggest that Muslims in America are assimilating. And they focused on the non-assimilation as Europe is the model for America. Right? they think that that every Muslim out there is a potential suicide bomber, which is ridiculous, and therefore they need to all be banned and they all or preferably all kicked out of the country, which is just not true. But some are, and differentiating between who is and who isn't, that's tricky, that's difficult, that you have to do. But that's what needs to be done instead of blaming all Muslims for all problems. They think that all countries in the Middle East are the same. They see no nuances. They don't see leadership. They don't see spiritual leadership. They don't see the role of ISIS's winning in the fact that there's terrorism around the world. They don't understand the psychology or any of this stuff. But they read. They consume huge amounts of news about Islam, and that's all they think about. It's all they know. But they don't know it in the end, because they don't see any nuance. They see one perspective, and it's an overload, right? It's this again. It's a package deal. There's truth there, but there's a huge amount of disproportion. There's a huge amount of context dropping, and there's some plain falsehoods all mixed in. And look, I consume a lot of that media because I get the Middle East Forum, Jihad Watch, and a lot of these other stuff because I'm interested, and I've given a lot of speeches about this. And I was among the first people of anybody to talk about this problem after 9/11 and to make a big deal out of it. I've got friends who deal with this problem intensely, anyway, from Fleming Rose to Daniel Pipes, who are considered a friend. And again, there's a lot of truth to these things. Sharia is a real problem. Is it taking over America? Of course not. But you have to be vigilant. You have to watch what's happening. Is that the biggest threat in the world? No, not in my view. Okay, but we'll have to do a whole show about Islam and the dangers. I know I've got a list of all the different shows. So, first of all, don't obsess about one topic. There's no point, right? Yeah, I mean, there we go on the chat. There are two kinds of Muslims, jihadi murderers and sleeper cells. Bullshit, to be polite. Absolute bullshit. But I don't want to go there. We'll go there on another show. And it's not helpful. That kind of differentiation is not helpful. 1.2 billion people are sleeper cells. Does nothing. That doesn't mean, by the way, that they aren't sleeper cells, and it doesn't mean that some Muslims who are not jihadis will become jihadis. Of course, some of them will become jihadis. But the assumption that all Muslims are sleeper cells is just ridiculous and silly and doesn't help. It doesn't help you think about the problem. It doesn't help you find solutions to the problem. It doesn't help you defend yourself. It is absurd. It certainly is absurd in America, and it's even absurd in Europe. But, all right, so I don't want to talk about more than that. Read Ben Baer's story. I will talk more about this, more about the news, more about media. I've also got here an NPR story, which I think is pretty good, on how to tell facts from fiction, how to tell fake stories, how to objectively read the news. And it's coming from NPR, a biased source of the news, but a good source of news. I will deal with that, all of that, in a future show. And it looks like I'm going to run over time. Oh, like, I've got a couple of TV show recommendations. And I know this is going to upset you, but they're both kind of positive, optimistic shows that actually reflect a positive view of the world and a positive view of life. All right, two shows. One is Mars, and I think this is on the National Geographic channel, and it's produced by National Geographic, and you can get it on iTunes and maybe on some of the other places. Anyway, Mars is a half documentary, half drama. And what's interesting about Mars is, after watching, and I've only watched, I think, one episode, what's interesting about it is I have to say that I have a better opinion of what's his name now? See, this is what happens late at night. And I can see his face. Anyway, the guy from SpaceX, somebody is going to tell me on the thing. The CEO of SpaceX, right? They'll tell me in the chat. The CEO of SpaceX is Elon Musk. Thank you, Elon Musk, who is a crony, and I've had a very low opinion of. But you know what? watching this show has given me a much better opinion of Elon Musk. And so the story is this. According to the show, and this is the documentary side of this, SpaceX was set up in order to colonize Mars. The purpose of SpaceX is to colonize Mars. It's a 30-year project, and they have a detailed plan on what they have to do between now and 30 years from now in order to colonize Mars. And they're working on it, and they're executing on the plan. And they have strategy sessions about what kind of technologies they have to develop today so that in 30 years we'll be able to send people to Mars to start the colonization process, right? Wow. I go, wow. That is amazing. That is fantastic. That wipes out Tesla and all the other bullshit that Elon Musk has done. I said bullshit more than once today on this show. That is amazing to me. That is the essence of American capitalism, that long-range thinking, taking on big, bold, ambitious programs. So that's half the show, and it's interspersed with a drama set in 2032 or whenever, right, where they're actually going to Mars using SpaceX technology, right? So it's a private venture. It's globally, it's got a, it's a kind of a global initiative, but it's really a private sector, all based on SpaceX technology. And they go to Mars and they've landed in Mars and all the problems. And they emphasize kind of the technical issues, the engineering issues that are involved in landing a spaceship in Mars and keeping people alive in Mars. So, it's really, 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 it really is cool. And it's really fun to watch and exciting. So I'm going to be watching that show. I've only watched one episode, and I encourage you to watch it. It's kind of a little, I don't know if the science fiction section is not as well made as I would like it to be, but it's just seeing people with that kind of vision and willing to project that vision into the future. And the interviews with Elon Musk, the interviews with engineers today, the interviews with other people involved with SpaceX. So I strongly encourage everybody to watch Mars and be inspired. Be inspired. That's what life should be about being inspired. The second one is kind of interesting. It's a little bit of fluff, and it's not typically kind of a show that I like. It's called Pure Genius, and it's a hospital drama, if you will. But it's got, in every show so far, I've only watched two shows. It ends with a happy ending, and I think the relationship's a little superficial, and the whole thing is a little fluffy for my taste. But this is the premise, and it's unrealistic in significant ways. But this is the premise. The premise is a rich billionaire in Silicon Valley who's made money in some industry. We don't know what. Has started a private hospital in Silicon Valley, which is not bound by any of the rules. It doesn't follow FDA regulations. Nobody's regulated. And it's got unlimited funds because this guy, it's all private, and this guy pours money into it. And it uses the greatest technology in the world. So it's the union, they say on the show, of the best minds in technology with the best minds in medicine. And they have come together. And not bound by any of the rules that politicians would inflict on them. So the FDA has not shown up yet. They're doing all this experimental stuff and nobody's stopping them. They do whatever the hell they want, basically, right? And they succeed. They keep succeeding. And they come up, I have no idea if the solutions they come up with, these medical issues, are good solutions, bad solutions. I don't know enough about it. They were using a spider web material to make biodegradable screws, screw somebody's bones together, and then the bone would grow, and the silk, I guess it's called silk, the from the spider web would disappear. I don't know if that's even remotely possible, but this is a program that celebrates technology, that celebrates medicine, that celebrates freedom. So the show starts with this amazing doctor, the best surgeon in America, fired from a hospital because you used a treatment on a boy that had not been approved by the FDA, but that he thought had a chance of curing the boy, and the boy dies. And he has to be fired because he used a treatment that was not approved by the FDA. And then he's recruited to this new hospital, this hospital created by this entrepreneur in Silicon Valley, because he's the best doctor and because he was willing to break the rules and because he was willing to change, to challenge the FDA policy. Now, it's got, I think it's going to have subtle leftist threats, right? So this is Hollywood. So politically, it's going to be leftist, but it's a, this is the Silicon Valley, you know, split brain thing, right? They love technology. They love the freedom that technology can give you. They love genius. They, you know, they love ability. They love success. All of this stuff, and yet they are in some ways leftist. But so we'll see. We'll see how the show goes politically, and we'll see if the government gets in the way, and we'll see if this is as pure as it seems to be so far. But it's on one of the big channels, like CBS or something, like mainstream channels. I'm not sure you're supposed to watch mainstream channels. Like you're not supposed to consume mainstream media. So it really is quite enjoyable in those aspects. It's a little, again, dorky and cheesy in kind of the relationships and stuff like that. It doesn't have – it's maybe it's because it's not dark that I find it a little cheesy, because everything else is dark. And a lot of the great television in the last few years has been amazingly dark. So anyway, two shows. I think you'll like them. Let me know what you think. Mars and Pure Genius. Mars and Pure Genius. One, I'm getting them both in iTunes. I download them and watch on the airplanes. I encourage you to do the same. And enjoy. All right. This has been the Yaron Brook Show from Berlin. By the way, you can follow me on Twitter, Yaron Brook, at Yaron Brook. You can follow me on Facebook. And Facebook will be there. We are going to close, and I will see you next week again. We'll be on Sunday, not on Saturday. We'll be on Sunday again. Then we'll get back to the Saturday regular schedule, at least for a while. There might be some changes in the future, but at least for now, we'll be sticking to the Saturday. But next week, Sunday, I will see you all. Talk to you all next Sunday after I get home. I'll be home next Sunday. Yay!